Yeah, great to have Kyle Draper back from Hawaii, as it turns out.
Yes.
Not Mexico. Jay and I were arguing last week. Is he in Cancun? I think it's Cabo. I think he went to Cabo. He didn't go to either one.
Bro, Cabo is coming up in June now.
Good.
Man. But it turned out to be a fantastic. We took the golf clubs, me and my son. Ooh. We golfed in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
You know, we went snorkeling or tried to go snorkeling. The winds were a little too much. But every day my daughter was like, this is paradise, Dad. This is
great.
Paradise.
Great.
And so.
Nobody gave you that. This is nice, but it ain't Mexico.
Dude, I could do no wrong in their eyes right now. Like, I am
tremendous.
Dad of the year for them.
That's awesome.
Yes. Wow. So it worked out.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Going to talk Kings in just a moment first. Steven on Sacktown Sports. Thanks for hanging, Steven. What's going on?
Not much, man. Thank you for letting me hang on for a while. Kyle, you're not a bad dad at all, man. It doesn't matter what you did, brother. You are a dad. And, you know, just like what JJ said, man, Patrick Ruwa with the save, man. Nice pull.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate
nice
it.
Nice pull, JJ, with the Patrick Ruwa, I gotta say.
Yeah. And
I'm just saying, that was a good pull. Real quick, man. I'm born and raised in Stockton. Did you guys know that Stockton was 30 minutes away from Sacramento? Did you guys know that?
Of course I knew that, bro. Have you listened to short drive right down I-5, Mercedes-Benz of Stockton?
It is just a short drive.
Yeah.
It is just a short drive. All right, real quick. I'm born and raised in Stockton, man. I moved up here in 2007. I'm a group home kid. You know, 2 years later, you know, here we are, City of Trees, man. And ever since I've been in here, ever since I've been here, it's always been the City of Trees, and that's what it always will be. JJ starting this movement, man, and
sounds like you're behind
you
him.
Get all the credit.
Yeah.
Because, boy, I'm hoping this thing takes off. I hope you had a good trip, man. It sounds like you did. And, man, you guys enjoy your day. Thank you for letting me rant.
Yeah, appreciate you, man. Thanks
Thank
for holding
Steven.
On, man.
It's a movement that Jay has started.
You know what, Jay? Dog, you might – no. I don't want to say that Mayor Darrell might be listening or something. I was about to say, you might have to run for office on this platform, bro. This will be your platform right here.
I need to be involved. I should be on the board of directors or the regents or something there.
I was afraid yesterday to go to my car because I thought like some of the powers that be were going to be like, you know, roughing us up or something. Hey, you guys, maybe you better drop this. This old secretary saying, that's not going to fly.
Right, that's not going to fly.
If you're smart,
right.
You'll stop talking right. about it. Got it?
We know where you live.
Yeah.
You know, cut it out.
Yeah, but he's undeterred.
Oh, my
yeah.
God.
And the movement grows.
We'll see it. I'm going to see it through, fellas.
Uh-huh.
We'll be talking about this in Baseball All-Stars.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome back, boys. Welcome.
Yeah, yeah. Did you happen to see what your buddy John Hollinger says about the Kings in the second half?
We still listening to that guy?
I just wondered if you saw it.
No, I didn't see what he said. What did he say?
He really didn't say much. He says Sacramento, he's talking about the West and how crazy it is. And by the way, one thing that I agree with, he says, Jay and I said this yesterday, I think the top 10, I think we know who's going to be.
Yes,
you know?
100. Yeah,
yeah,
it's said already.
Yeah,
the number of teams, the
right.
teams that, yeah, the actual, yeah.
yeah. So that means the Kings. I mean, they're probably almost certainly at least in the play.
At worst, to play,
and they can
yeah.
they work their way out of that. But Hollinger says Sacramento has a favorable slate of home games in its closing stretch, but the underlying numbers thus far don't augur particularly well for a dominant closing kick with a mere plus .5 scoring margin. Kings also lose a tiebreak to the Pelicans, although they are likely to win ones with the Mavs and the Suns. He goes on to say Dallas looks like they're playing well. So John Hollinger says the schedule looks nice for the Kings here for, you know, that March stretch, but he says they are not playing well enough to convince him that they're ready to go on a run.
Here's the thing, Whitey. This is what I'm talking about. We got too much space in our lives for content. People just write things just to be writing things.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what the Kings did last season after the All-Star.
Oh, I know.
They hit their stride.
Yes, they did.
And I understand the schedule's tough. I know you got Denver. I know you got the Clippers. You got all these tough teams. But 17 of the 28 are at home. A week off for this Sacramento Kings team. Why can't they go 17-11? 17-11, that's nothing. That should be doable. And when you look at their schedule, pull it up real quickly. They have some critical games down the stretch that I think will be favorable to them. When you look at how they end it out. They got a tough East Coast trip. But Boston, by Friday, April 5th, may not be playing for anything.
Maybe.
At Brooklyn, they'll be out of it. At OKC, that's going to be tough. Home against New Orleans, home against Phoenix, home against Portland. You got head-to-head games against teams you're going to be jockeying for position with late in the season.
Yeah, I'm talking specifically games against Dallas,
yeah,
too.
Two against Dallas, New Orleans, Phoenix. You know, Clippers, I think they're probably a little ahead of you. But you have time to make it up. And just because you're playing a certain way February 10th doesn't mean you're going to be playing that way. We heard De'Aaron Fox yesterday say he's been dealing with a shoulder issue.
Yep.
And we'll talk about that in a little bit here. But I firmly believe this team can go on a run.
Remember all the people you and I heard from? Was it last week or the week before? How do you guys know he has a shoulder injury?
What are you talking about?
You don't know.
I'm going to say something here, and this might piss some people off. But there's a reason why we do what we do. We're not Joe Schmo on the streets watching at home saying, oh, man, well, you know, looking at a box score the next day. My guy Whitey doesn't just look at the box score. He watches the games. I'll give you some respect.
I do look at the box score, too.
I know you do that, but you actually watch the games. And anybody that knows basketball can see with their eyes. De'Aaron Fox has been dealing with someone. And so everybody got an opinion. Not to say you can't have one, but sometimes trust the people that actually talk to the players or in the press conferences.
Well, the thing,
you know,
about
that kind of thing.
Yeah, that bothered me was some suggesting that you guys are saying he's hurt because you're making
makes covering up for him. Right. Carrying the team's water or something like that. Clearly, they don't know, especially you. I could see somebody accusing me of that because they, you know, Vivek signs my checks. Because
you do that all the time.
But I'll tell you, you see me on a post-game show.
Yeah.
I'm not carrying the water for anybody. When they lose a bad game, I'm coming at them. Now, when I call the game play-by-play, you got to be favorable to the home team. But pre- and post-game?
I'm being honest here. I've heard you say some things on post-game where I've thought, I wonder if he's going to hear from somebody on that. Not, you know, but that's just how you do it.
Yeah, and I haven't, you know, thankful for the Kings. Nobody's ever called me and said, Kyle, take it easy on our guys or any, you know, because.
But let me say this real quick, because I want to make sure I say this right here, is that's what makes you you, though. And I want to give you kudos for that, because I think what you're arguing is, Drapes, is there's a lot of people who just kind of blowing smoke. And J.J. Redick has kind of said, he told on himself. But I think it's authentic. When you do it. And so kudos to you for that. I just want to make sure of that, because I don't think we give flowers enough to people who are authentic.
Appreciate that. And it goes back to, who was it? Ryan Clark with his Brock Purdy take, remember?
Yes.
You know, it's like guys just be saying things just to say things and not really, you know, backing them up or thinking them through. They're just saying things for clicks. And so when we were talking about De'Aaron Fox, we didn't carry it's clear as day he was dealing. At least that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to be accused of carrying the water for the organization, that's not what we do. We're not going
to
do that.
We'll talk to Jason Anderson today.
Yeah.
And he's the one, I believe, who reported that De'Aaron Fox admitted he had the injury. What concerns me is that De'Aaron Fox is saying things like, well, I don't know what's wrong with it. I didn't have an MRI. And that's his right. And it is not our right to know what's wrong. As much as we as fans think it is our right, it's not our right. He's so vague about it, it suggests to me, and I hope I'm wrong, that there's something really going on in there.
Right.
You're not having an MRI?
And he also said it's not something that a week off is going to cure and fix as well.
So I think he knows what's going on there.
An after-the-season kind of thing that you got to deal with.
Remember last year we knew about Sabonis' thumb? Keegan had something very similar. We never found
out
about
it. Nobody ever talked about that. Yeah. Keegan had his before Sabonis, I believe, and played through it. And so, no, you're right. And this De'Aaron Fox thing, it does concern me a little bit, but he hasn't missed time. And if he's out there, he got to play. But I'm a little nervous about it, you know. But we talked too. They're going to make at least the plan. I still think they have a chance at that top six. I think those two games against Dallas are going to be critical.
Yeah.
You got to get sweep those. You got the season series. You got the tiebreaker against them. Still not sold on the Pelicans, even though here we are 50-plus games into the season. And so I think they could sneak into that 5 or 6 spot.
How do the Kings get better between now and the end of the season? Mike Brown says that's an easy one, and we break that down when we come right back here. Drive, guys, Sacktown Sports. Best thing about the All-Star game is that now it's over, but I don't begrudge players needing their rest, whatever. But Kyle, I want the games to start. Finally, we got basketball again tomorrow night, right?
Yes, and this is going to be a sprint. You know, they say the season's a marathon. Well, now we're in the home stretch. Mm-hmm. We're in, especially the way that the West is jumbled up. Every game is going to matter. Tomorrow against Wimby and the Spurs, big game. And so it's, you know, and that's the thing really quickly, Whitey. You know, we talk about the All-Star break and how crappy the game has been, you know, is and has been. This season, from a basketball standpoint, regular season, I think it's been a fantastic regular season in terms of league-wide, some of the level of play that we've seen so mm-hmm. far.
I thought one of the advantages the Kings had last year mm-hmm. was that they seemed to take every game in the regular season very seriously. Yeah. And there were some other teams in the West, especially some of the older teams, that seemed to be taking some time to find their way last year. And then when we got to the stretch run, the Kings had a little bit of a cushion built in, and then they started playing even better. Yeah. And this year, I think, not to get negative again, but they've failed to do that because of all the games that we know and they know they should have won. So that's one reason why I think they find themselves right now looking up at so many teams as compared to a year ago.
Yeah, they've sort of, you know, used up all their, you know,
mulligans
or yeah, exactly. Now you gotta, you know, you can't afford, you know, a 2-3-4 game losing streak because you had some bad losses. Think about this. You lost four times to the Pelicans. If you just split those two, how different would this look? If you just beat the Charlottes and the Portlands, have three more wins, let's say, how different does this feel and look right now? And so their margin for error is very slim right now.
Mm-hmm. Mike Brown yesterday was talking to reporters, and he was joking about how, you know, he's got in trouble for the things he said about the officials, and he's talking about playing with his grandson over the break, had a great time, and then the question turned to, well, what do you guys need to work on now? And he went right to it, didn't he? Right away, he says,
yes.
Our three-point defense is killing us. He says, if our three-point defense was just average, if it was average, we would be 8th in the league in defensive rating. So it's clear as you look at the team, it's a double-edged sword. It's like, wow, that's really a problem area. But at least you know how you can improve. And the Kings' three-point defense, defending the three-point line, has been their real Achilles mm-hmm. heel this year, and it has cost them dearly to this point.
Yeah, and you know, this is something we've talked about in the past. When you look at the NBA and the evolution of the NBA, the three-point shot is so huge right now. I'm looking at the numbers, Whitey. On average, teams take 35 threes per game. That's second most in NBA history to the 2021-22 season when they took 35.2. So more and more teams are taking more and more threes, and the Kings' three-point defense is the worst it's been. Mm-hmm, like fundamentally, if you want to be a good team, and I'm about to pull these stats up, you have to defend the three-point line. I'm looking at the top 10 teams that defend the three in terms of percentage. You got the Pelicans. The Blazers actually do a good job,
really?
Surprisingly. Yeah, they only allow 34.7. The Rockets, but then after that, Philly, Boston, Minnesota, Milwaukee, Clippers in there, Cleveland in there. Basically, you know, the so-called contenders, if you will, are top 10, top 15 in three-point defense. Now you go all the way down to where the Sacramento Kings are. Listen to the teams right ahead of the Kings in terms of three-point defense. Charlotte,
yeah.
Dogs, Utah,
ah.
Atlanta,
yeah.
San Antonio, Brooklyn, Memphis, Detroit, Toronto. Before we even get to a so-called contender, the Lakers are 21st in the league. Like, the Kings are with the dregs of the NBA in terms of three-point defense. And they can't. Mike Brown's right. They're not going to go anywhere. Because every team now, and I've read this stat the other day. Remember Golden State in 2016, 73-9?
Mm-hmm.
Their offense was revolutionary. Best we I think they'd be like 15th or something now, like whatever it may
be. Rating.
So the game has adapted so much that every team has three or four guys that can knock down the three. Every team has four or five guys that can get hot from three. And so night in and night out, you face guys that can beat you. Alec Burks, remember he had a monster game against us. And so if you can't defend the three, there's zero chance, in my opinion, of you winning a champion.
The trick of it is, it's what Mike Brown said is factually true.
Yeah.
It's like if we were better defending a three-point line, our overall defense would be top 10. But they're related. You can't just you can't separate it that way.
Right.
One of the reasons they're so bad defending the three-point line is because their defense overall is so bad, right?
And
they
vice versa. Yeah.
Off of the dribble, and then the defense breaks down. And at that point, like we discussed with the high flyer all the time, I mean, a team can beat the Kings off the dribble, and then basically they got 5-on-4. And it's a matter of, what do we want? We have a man advantage. Right. Which shot do we want? We got a guy open, you know, the short three, whatever.
Right.
So that's why they're so bad at defending the three-point line, is because they're so bad. Their on-ball defense is so bad.
Yeah, and I think, and we mentioned this in the crossover with Stiles and Watkins, I think teams, the book is out on the Kings.
Yeah.
You can beat them from three. When teams like Orlando, who don't shoot a lot of threes, when teams like Detroit come in, good three-point shooting team, like, they know the three is going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they walk into the building with confidence.
Yeah.
And so how do we fix that, though, Whitey? That's the question, right?
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. What do you do?
That's a great point that Chris made, and I don't know if he had the exact numbers, and I'm not sure what they are, but he pointed out that teams in league, basically, there's a number that teams average on an open three. And when teams are playing the Kings, they hit much higher percentage than that, which implies, well, that's luck. If teams make open threes at this rate, why do they make more, a higher percentage of open threes against the Kings? It would seem like maybe it's just the bounce of the ball, but maybe, as you say, there's more to it. Like, teams are just so much more confident.
I have a theory, and I don't know if this is 100% right, but this is what I think. When teams play the Kings, and Mike Brown will tell you this, he talks about physicality. Well, when you play the Kings, when you're on the offensive end, it's almost like a glorified pickup game, if you will. And so you're more confident. You come off screens a little freer. Like, I can't imagine who's a top five defensive team. Let's say Boston. When you play a Boston, at the end of the game afterwards, you feel it.
Mm-hmm.
When you play the Kings, it's not like you went to battle. It's not like, you know, you exhausted yourself. You laid it all on the line to get the win. The Kings make it too easy for teams on the offensive end. And so that's why I think, you know, you're fresher legs. You know, you're more comfortable. You're more confident because the Kings don't make you feel them. That's what Mike Brown is trying to get to his guys. Like,
and he's been trying to get that through to him for the last season and a half.
Yes. Like, you know, when I look at Memphis, not this year, but back when they had grit and grind, like when they were
the grindhouse, you
know, a couple of years ago, win or lose, when you left that game,
oh yeah,
you knew you had to earn it. I think a lot of times teams don't have to earn their wins against the Kings.
So how do you fix it? You need somebody who's not playing a lot yet to start contributing at that end. You need like Keon Ellis to become a better offensive player. You need Duarte to start doing some of the things that he's been doing.
Right.
I don't know, because it's not realistic to expect the people that aren't very good at that to all of a sudden just be better at it because you want them to be better at it, right?
No, you're right. You're right. You can't just wish and hope it. You know, you got – and so if you're Mike Brown, do you turn the Keon Ellis's, the Kessler Edwards, you know? But even those guys – they don't fight you to the death. They're great on-ball defenders. They're good, but I don't know if you're feeling them. They're in position, but they're not bodying you. They're not being physical with you. And I go back to you. Everybody laughed at your boy Drapes in the offseason. I would have loved a Dylan Brooks. We need a tone setter defensively. We need somebody who's our tone setter defensively. Who's our leader defensively? Who's the guy that rallies us and gets us in the right position? You know what? Like, we've seen it a little bit with Davion at times.
Keegan sometimes.
But he's not that.
He's the closest to it, but he's not it.
Right.
You know, you go back to the Moneyball days of the A's, and sometimes it's counterintuitive. My point is this, and we've talked about this, maybe the way the Kings correct their defensive flaws is just by getting better and better offensively.
Just outscoring.
Yeah, huh? Because, I mean, how many more options do you have defensively right at this point when you're not going to be adding any more people?
Yeah. No, you're right. And, you know, that goes back to Sam Amick's article back in December when the Kings, you know, were said to be looking at offense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's one
Mike
thing.
Mike Brown didn't seem to care for that, but here
right,
we are.
Right, here we are. Like, your best defense might be offense, you know, having to score. But then you become the Indiana Pacers. Look at the Indiana Pacers. They could score with anybody. Great offense. But they also give up a lot. Is that what we're trying to accomplish? And Mike Brown knows that's fool's gold.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Brown knows come playoff time, that's not going to get you where you need to be.
If anybody knows the answer, it's our next guest. He was a Kings beat writer for, 16 years, currently writing for The Athletic. Jason Jones joins us next year to Drive Guys Sacktown. Our next guest here is Kyle Draper, Whitey Gleason. Covered the Kings for many, 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 many years. Not all of them, Kyle, as you know, were glory years for the Kings. Currently writing for The Athletic. Last time I talked to him, he was living in Vallejo. I'm not sure whether he still is. Let's find out. Jason Jones with us. How are you, Jason?
I'm good. And yes, I'm still in Vallejo. Have not left.
That's awesome. I'm from Vallejo, as you know. By the way, before we get into the Kings, I couldn't be more sincere here when I say I really appreciate the piece on Black Aces that you're writing for The Athletic for Black History Month. It's tremendous about the African-American pitchers, Americans and Canadians who've won 20 games. It's a great series. And I'm wondering, Jason, could I real quickly tell you a Bob Gibson story? Would that be okay?
Oh, please. I've heard so many. I mean, the more, the better.
Okay. And this is Mark Ibanez told me this, and Orlando Cepeda told him. This is a quick story, and we'll get back to the Kings. Bob Gibson, real tough guy that I know you wrote about. Bob Gibson and Orlando Cepeda were teammates on the Cardinals in 67-68. Cepeda gets traded the next year to the Braves. So the first time the Braves come in to St. Louis in 69, Gibson's like, come to my house for lunch. They're teammates. They'd been to the World Series 2 years in a row. Cepeda's like, great. So the game starts, and Cepeda comes up in the first inning, and first pitch, Gibson nearly kills him. It's right at his head, buzzes the tower. Cepeda goes down in a heap and gets up, says, hey, I was just at your house for lunch. Bob Gibson says, well, we're not at lunch now, are we, mother bleeper? So that's that was the kind of competitor Bob Gibson was. But, Jason, how about these Kings? How competitive can they be the rest of the way when they're having so many problems guarding people?
That's what it is for me. How much are you going to commit to defense? I mean, there's a reason why teams like Detroit can come in and beat you and Charlotte can beat you at home. Because you give teams too many good looks, you let teams get comfortable. And, you know, even on a bad NBA team, they've got guys who can score. I mean, that's the way the league is now. Everyone has guys who can score. And you let someone walk in your building and get comfortable, you can't rely. I think last year was kind of lightning in a bottle. They had so many games where in the fourth quarter, they turn it on and they'd go on these runs and they'd beat teams late. But you can't live like that. And, I mean – sometimes, you know, the basketball gods will even things out. And I think a lot of times we've seen cases this year where, like a Detroit game, where the basketball gods don't let you get back in the game and you lose to a team that has 6-7 wins at home. So, for me, with the Kings, it all comes down to the commitment at that end. You're not going to be able to go out and make a trade, obviously, now the deadline's passed. You're not bringing in some great defensive players, you know, off the street at this point. It's all on those guys in the locker room to commit to that end of the floor.
Jason Jones of The Athletic joining us. Jason, it's your boy Drapes. Hey, man, you know, when you look at this season for the Kings, the numbers are similar, record-wise, everything, but obviously the feeling is different. What would your message be to Kings fans about the growth of this team? It seems like we want it microwaved and we want to be a contender right now, whereas Monty McNair, Wes Wilcox, they seem to be taking the patient, long-term approach. What do you think about that?
I think you can't – every season is its own story. I think last season – you can't hold on to last season and say, well, last season we were the third seed. You know, this is not last season anymore. And each season has its own individual story. And you go, 16 years not making the playoffs, you weren't going to go from that to the NBA Finals more than likely in a year or two. And last year, the Kings were a great story. I mean, the way they kind of caught people by surprise in some cases. But you know what? They have, they had 82 plus games of film on you now. Teams are ready for you. So that's part of the team's learning curve as well. What do you do now that no one's looking at you as the same old Kings or, oh, that's a cute little story over there? You're getting team's best shot now. So that takes another level of intensity, preparation. And like I said, in defense, you got to be ready for that, because what you don't want to be is that team where teams say, you know what, they're a good team, but they're going to let us stay in the game because, you know what, hey, they're not going to try to stop us. So, they've got to take that next step collectively to say, we're going to commit to stopping people, not just in the fourth quarter, not for a spot here and there, but over a 48-minute game. Can you get a string together stops consistently? But if I'm a Kings fan, you can't hold on to what last season was. Last season was last season. You had a lot of other teams that had a lot of injuries. A lot of things broke well for the Kings. That's not the case this year. So you're going to have to go out there and, create another story this season.
Jason, as you said, the Kings caught a lot of teams by surprise last year. How likely is it, do you think, that maybe for the Kings front office, maybe they were caught by surprise this year by how much better so many other teams in the West have gotten?
I think if that was the case, that's shame on them. Because you couldn't go into a season expecting Paul, George, and Kawhi Leonard to miss a ton of games. You couldn't go into a season expecting, Denver to have injury. You can't rely on that. I think what you didn't bank on was Minnesota and Oklahoma City taking right. That jump. That's the one that catches, I think, everyone off guard. Now, I don't think anyone saw that coming, but even still, it happened. I mean, last season, people looked at the Kings like they looked at OKC, like, oh, where they come from?
Yeah.
But, even last year, Minnesota had a ton of talent. So I don't think you go into this year thinking Minnesota was going to be a bad team. I didn't have them being top two, but you thought they'd be, had a chance to be a top eight team. So I just think, when you look at all those factors, I don't think I guess it would be malpractice if the front office went in thinking, oh, we got this, because you didn't go in the offseason and do anything to where you could say, we added this and this piece to where we're so much better than we were a year ago. It's pretty much the same team from a year ago. So you can't, I haven't talked to Monty in a while, but I know Monty's a very practical guy. He thinks big picture. And so I think that you probably figured, our improvement comes internally. It comes from Keegan getting better. It comes from De'Aaron and Sabonis being another full season together. That's where you looked for your improvement, I think. I don't think, but yeah, if they went in thinking that, we were number three last year, we'll just go to number two, that'd have been crazy.
Jason Jones of The Athletic joining us, talking everything Sacramento Kings. Were you shocked, Jason, that our boys didn't make the All-Star game? No De'Aaron Fox, and most surprising to me, no DeMontis Sabonis.
I thought De'Aaron was going to make it. I thought Sabonis would have problems because I figured AD would get in, and I figured more than likely they would vote in one of Minnesota's bigs. So I knew Sabonis, it might get dicey. I thought Devin Booker had missed so much time that was going to be De'Aaron's spot. That was kind of my thinking going in. To get neither one of them was shocked. I was surprised by that. I thought they'd get at least one, but the way that game looked on Sunday, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any shame.
We're good.
Weren't a part of that.
Yeah.
I think the real shame is that the way the CBA is set up, that could affect De'Aaron's money.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, that's the crime of it. That his contract should not be based on essentially an opinion poll, which is what a lot of times getting an All-Star nod or All-NBA spot. It's an opinion poll. It's like the NBA, All-NBA. It's the writers and media members saying, I think this guy is better than these other five or six guys. And I don't think that's crazy that someone's vote could cost De'Aaron Fox, $70 million?
It's nonsense. Jason, a moment ago you mentioned Keegan. What have you made of Keegan's progress this year? The ups and downs, the improvement defensively. He's had some big offensive games. What do you have made of that whole saga this year?
I mean, second year guy, he's made strides. Do Do I see a superstar yet? No, but it's second year, you know, and I just, and that's the reason why around the trade deadline, I was, my thought was, if you can get a star and if you got to part with Keegan for a star, you do it the same way they did with Tyler. The way you did with Tyler. If you can get a star, I didn't think Siakam was a star like that. About to give, you know, if you got two all-stars already, you got a chance to get a bona fide third guy and put a star with a De'Aaron in his prime and Sabonis in his prime. You got to at least look at it. You know, I don't think you make anybody untouchable, but like I said, Keegan's young, and I think he'll continue to get better. He'll continue to develop, and, you know, but you got two more years before you got to worry about extending them.
Yep.
So I think, you know, unless you got blown away, you know, you just continue to take that development and, you know, and see where you go. And I think for the, you know, defensively, it'll probably come to the offseason. Can you find a couple of more of those rangy 3-and-D guys to go with them? You know, because when I see too many games when the Kings struggle where it's the bonus, you know, 25-18, and then the two forward spots is kind of a, you know, where were you guys at tonight? Mm-hmm. You know, 6 points here, 8 points there. So you're going to need to, you know, probably Keegan to be more consistent offensively. I mean, if he was getting, say, 20 a night, you know, you rely on that, that changes everything. I mean, I think you look at a team like a Denver, I think Keegan can be like a Michael Porter Jr., if not better. Mm-hmm. I think you know, can be more durable. I think he can be more consistent with his shot. So you get Keegan, you know, playing at a very high level. To me, that changes the game for Sacramento, especially with the defensive end. If you got a guy that height, that size, who can defend multiple spots on the wing, now you're helping Sabonis out, because if you can keep guys from getting to the paint, he's not picking up cheap fouls because guys are getting in the paint.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times I think, you know, a lot of times bigs will get labeled as foul prone, and it's not really their fault. It's, you know, you keep letting guys drive at your center, he's going to get two or three just because he's standing there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you continue to shore up things around, you know, I think Keegan will be a big part of that. De'Aaron obviously will be a big part of that. And, you know, in getting another, you know, two guard who can be a lockdown defender for stretches, I think that also helps change the dynamic of what you get with the Kings.
Jason, you know, you mentioned the All-Star game, All-Star weekend. We all grew up watching All-Star games. We got our favorites. We remember how competitive it used to be. How do we fix it? Who's responsible for the travesty that we're seeing during All-Star weekend?
The players.
Mm.
They're the only ones who can fix it. They're the only one. I think someone's got to get mad during an All-Star game. Someone's got to say, you know, you're not just going to get a layup. You're going to at least have to – I'm going to challenge you. They're the only ones who can fix this. I mean, and when I was reading what Edwards was saying, basically it's a break. We don't come out here to be competitive. It's like, oh, it's almost like peer pressure. Like now when the new guys get in, they don't want to be that guy who looks crazy who's actually trying.
Right.
So it's going to take, you know, it's going to take someone who wants to stir it up and say, you know what? This isn't cool. You know, I want to go out there and compete. I want to send a message going into the last 30 games of the season that, hey, I got this guy on the other side. You know, maybe if you're in the West and you're saying, I'm going to get to the finals, there's Jason Tatum. I'm giving it to Jason Tatum today. I'm going to let him know we're, you know, All-Star game or not, it's not going to be an easy, you know, an easy road when you see me. You got to get guys with that mentality. And I mean, after about 2 minutes of watching that thing on Sunday, I said, I'm glad I got this Black Aces stuff to work on. I can't watch this. I mean, at least give me some fake hustle.
Yeah.
They didn't even bother to fake the hustle. Because even in years past, you got the, you know, hey, we're going to start trying the last half of the third and the fourth
quarter. We won't even get that.
Yeah. We didn't even get that. We got Karl Anthony Towns trying to get 50.
Mm.
But it didn't even matter. I mean, if you're going to get some kids and show them about the NBA, just don't show them that All-Star game.
Don't.
Show them Sabrina and Steph and say, this is how you shoot, but don't show them the All-Star game.
Jason Jones from The Athletic. If you get a chance, if you haven't already, catch his series on the Black Aces in The Athletic. Thank you very much, Jason. Great to catch up with you. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
No problem.
All right, bro.
That's why I got my A's hat on today for Stu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, Dave y'all Stewart.
Y'all didn't even give no love to the A's hat, fellas.
Oh, my bad, Jay. Hey. My bad.
Shots out.
Smoke just celebrated a birthday, too, right?
I'm not sure about that, but yeah, he was fun to talk to. I guess yeah. I'm having a ball with this story. The guys I've been talking to, like I spent an hour with Dusty Baker talking. So I mean, this has been a joy.
That's the best.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. We appreciate Jason.
Guys.
Yeah.
Catch you next time.
Yeah, all right, bro. Look forward to it when we come back. King's bold predictions for the second half. Drive guys, Sacktown Sport. So Drapes, your boy Compio says opponents hire limousines to pick up the Kings to make sure they get their threes.
Oh
yeah,
Compio. He's our guy, though. He said some things earlier. I would have gave him a two-piece no sauce, but I ignored him here.
Two-piece extra crispy.
Yeah, exactly. Because Compio, he did say the drive, the number one afternoon sports show in Sacramento, the city of trees. He says, well.
He's another person totally on board with Jay's efforts.
Why are you against Compio for calling the city of trees?
No, because
right?
He said Draper hates trees because of his golf game. That's true.
Oh, I hit all.
He throwing jabs. Okay. See, I can't take what he's saying serious.
Yeah,
man.
You know Ben Hogan, and I read a book about Ben Hogan. Ben Hogan's like, they should just take all the trees off the golf
course.
What's
the point?
Why do we have trees?
Exactly. What's the point? Ansel Hoffman, you got too many trees. Like, I've hit every single one of them at that
track.
It's a tough track.
Yeah, I think that was one of Eddie Johnson's favorites when he used to live here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like, really one of his favorites?
I believe he played out there a lot.
He must be solid then, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Because you got to hit straight out there.
Yeah,
any kind of fade or hook, or you in trouble. You can't advance the ball. It's awful, man.
What's more difficult? Enlighten me. Is it the traps or the trees?
Like I think the
away
trees.
From each one. Okay.
I think because
traps aren't that really that hard.
Traps
really?
Aren't that hard.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you have half a clue, even and I'm not very good, but I can, I know how to. Okay, I'm
you know how to get out. Yeah.
I mean, you can't really cautious stroke because you can't make a shot out of the trap, but you get out of it.
And Jay is different levels of trees.
Yes, sir.
Like if you hit it in the trees, but can still maybe advance it.
Okay.
Like, but when there is just lined with trees and you just got to chip out, you know, it's like it adds a stroke. It's way more difficult, man.
First time I ever broke 100, which I know isn't much, but you know, the first time you
First time, yeah.
Yeah, so I had like an 88 after 17. And I'm thinking, I think I got this. And I was playing Sharp Park in Pacifica. And I hit the first shot, you know, it's like tee shot out of bounds. All right, well, I'm doing okay. And I'm hitting like five into the green, you know, and I hit one. up and it goes in this tree, one of those gnarly like cypress.
Yeah,
and it didn't come down. Hey, what's the rule? So
you just drop it, right? Is that what you do?
I think so.
Yeah,
okay.
Anyway, you take it one though, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. You gotta take a stroke on that.
Yeah, you have Mike Bibby rules for something
right.
like that.
Oh, Mike.
Anyway, I think I barely made
I'm
it.
Text but, Mike. Yeah. We gotta get it. Let's get him on this week. We gotta get Mike on this week. Friday, let's get Mike Bibby on. We'll get Mike Bibby on Friday.
You want to text him or you want me to text him?
No, I've got him. Okay. No, I
got
him.
All right.
He's one of the ones that responds to me. Compio says his low at Ansel is 68.
Oh.
Nah, I think that's just on the front nine. No, that's just I'm not believing you, Compio.
That's really impressive.
That's it, right. A 68
like,
is
what?
Hella good. Like, wow.
That's prototype.
That is. That's
I'm not
68.
Playing with him.
I'm not playing with him. He was playing from 100 yards out or something like that. 68? Wow.
I got to tell you this story. I was out at Ansel one time with David Sutherland.
Okay.
David Sutherland, who was on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Great guy. Haven't talked to him in a while. Great guy. His brother is Kevin Sutherland. He's also on the PGA Tour. So me and David are teeing off. And as I'm teeing off, this single joins us. And so I hit my tee shot, and I hit this scud, you know, scooting through the trees on the right, like 170 corkscrews, terrible shot. And I hit it. I go up to the guy. I go, hi, I'm Kevin. He goes, hi. Then David comes up, and you know, you can imagine where he stripes one, you know, power fade. Then he goes up. The guy's, hi, I'm David Sutherland. So the guy goes, wait, so you're David and Kevin Sutherland? And David starts cracking up. And he goes, no, that's not my brother.
No,
he thought that was so like, funny. And even the guy's confused, like, wait, that's Kevin
that's
Sutherland?
Kevin? No.
Yeah. Didn't hit the ball that well.
Dude, I'm shutting my computer down.
What's the matter?
Compio is at a dog. I'm giving him way too much love on this show, first of all. You see his last comment right there? And you can check it out on the YouTube chat, Sacktown Sports 1140. David and Kevin, do you see that one?
Yeah.
Way at the bottom.
Yeah.
We're a year ahead of me in high school.
Uh-huh.
Okay. This guy knows everybody.
Yeah.
Ray Allen, he was at Wilt's 100-point
exactly
game.
Yeah. What did you make ridiculous of Jason Jones' idea that, hey, the players just, you know, somebody's got to get mad. And
yeah,
the All-Star game's going to get, I just don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen because these guys all like each other. Like, they all come up, you know, playing AU, knowing each other from tournaments, college ball, summer ball. Like, these guys, they look at it like a fraternity. Like, and you know, like they got to stick together. And so there's no inherent competition.
Yeah.
There's no, oh, man, you know, like Kobe wanted to go at guys, you know. AI wanted to go, like, Tatum's like, you know what? There's no competitive fire edge into it. And I'm surprised a guy like Anthony Edwards, too, would say what he said and treat the game like he did, because he's the one guy that's playing in every game, doesn't want to miss games. He loves the game too much. And, you know, to come out there and not have – it needs to be some animosity,
mm-hmm,
you know, like, you know, whether it's a Draymond type, you know. Somebody needs to set the tone, but it's disappointing, man.
Yeah, because there's so few Kobe's, Larry Bird's.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Kobe would have been a guy, if he was playing now, he'd say, come on, MFers, let's go, right? And
right.
Now there's no one – the best players are not going to do that. It'd be like – well, I think Jaylen Brown even said, well, there was some talk of playing.
Yeah,
hard,
there was
but,
talk. And then Doc like, and Larry
Kobe's
Bird went
yeah,
in.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And yeah. It had no impact.
Yeah. So Kobe wouldn't be, well, I was going to play hard, but the guys didn't want to.
No, Kobe's
not
about
Kobe would have.
And
yeah.
Kobe would embarrass you if you didn't yeah. play hard. So then you had to raise your game.
Right.
Nowadays,
right.
Who's the one guy that's setting the tone? There isn't anybody.
Right. Not playing now. Kings bold predictions for the second half. What do you make of these?
All right. Let's
Domas is going to end up second team all NBA. Second team all NBA.
Mm.
Fox is still going to get his first 50 burger this year.
Okay.
I think Davion's going to get his 3-point percentage up around 35.
Really?
I know he's 70. You know, he's like 70% over his last five.
Yeah, he's playing well, shooting well lately.
And, well, I said this earlier in the crossover. If the 3-point defense does not improve, I mean, if it does not improve, they're not getting out of the play.
Let's take them one by one.
Yeah.
What was your top one?
Yeah.
Sabonis.
Second team all NBA.
I'm buying that.
Uh-huh.
Because Embiid's hurt. You got the 65-game minimum rule. And Jokic is already first team. We all agree on that. Who's the other center that would be there?
Gobert. Yeah.
Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
No, I think, you know, Domas keeps up what he's been doing. I think by the end of the year,
that's it.
He'll get his recognition.
Fox gets his first 50 burger.
50's a lot.
I know.
50's a lot.
It depends on his wing.
Yeah.
It depends. I mean, among other things.
Right. That shoulder. Ooh, that's tough. Because to me, to get 50, he's going to need 7 or 8 threes, you know? His 3-point numbers have been down last month or two.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to flirt with it. I mean, he's going to flirt with it, but that's going to be tough.
That's what I wonder about the shoulder. If it's something with the joint, and I know I'm going way over my skis here, but some of that stuff with the joints in your shoulder affects the stability. So it's not just, hey, it hurts, but it's like, if it's like a little wobbly, you can imagine how hard it is to shoot a basketball if your shoulder's like sliding in and out of place a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of, oh, it hurts. It's like, it ain't doing what I need it to do, potentially.
And you know, as you say that, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking the percentage is down.
Yeah.
But also his attempts around the basket are down. What if the shoulder is making him less likely to incline to drive, but also messing up his 3-point shot?
Mm-hmm.
So you might be right, man. That might be why the numbers have dipped the way they have.
And Davion will get his 3-point percentage up around 35.
35 or under. You can't say around.
Right,
call it now.
Yeah, yeah.
35-ish.
Ish.
35.
You don't even sound confident in that.
That was I said before the season started, so I don't want to walk it back.
Right.
But, you know, I know that's he's going to have to continue to shoot it to really impressive clip to get it there.
You know, the thing is, he doesn't take a whole lot. So it's not going to take a lot to, you know, boost it up.
Yeah.
You know, give it another month or so of hot play. I'm buying that, actually.
Really?
Yes, because the shots look good. It's not like he's, you know, he's wonky with it or anything. Like his form looks, form looks perfect. The feet are set. And so, you know, he's not going to be 70% like he's been shooting, you know, the last week or two. But I think he's putting so much work on that shot. 35% should be something he achieves.
Yes.
So I'm buying on that.
We haven't heard from Drapes yet about all the talk that the A's could be coming to Sacramento. Ooh. Friday, we got some big news on that. So Sacramento's Major League Baseball dreams, have they just evaporated before our very eyes? What's up with that? We find out next year with the Drive Guys when we come right back on Sacktown Sports.